Welcome to the DC Breezes podcast. My name is Greg Esser. I am your host. This week, I am having a conversation that I was very excited to have since day one of the 2017 season. That is a conversation with Del Rico Johnson, a veteran of the Elite Ultimate scene, but a freshman, a rookie on the Breeze in 2017. He put up quite a season over the 14 games of the year. 18 blocks he had, which led the team. He also tallied 19 goals aside of that, and 6, I believe, assists. Anyhow, a great conversation with him in store. Couple things off the top from me. The 28-person roster for the postseason was finalized by the Breeze today. I would say no huge surprises. Gives Stanley and Smolinski the tools to create a flexible roster for the postseason games, because as you may know, or if you don't, I'll fill you in, any given game you get 20 roster spots, active roster spots on the day of the contest. So with 28 names, you'll still need to shear away 8 any given playoff game, but they can go a lot of different directions with those 28. It's been a season where there's been contributions from 35 different players up and down the roster, and many important contributions were left off this final playoff roster. What jumps out in my mind when I look down the list is Brad Scott's not on the roster. He didn't play any games in 2017, so I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but I think he is finally healthy now, and for a big contribution that he's put up in previous years, I was, yeah, I'll say it, a little surprised to see him left off there. I don't know, you know, who you leave him off, who loses their spot in favor of Brad Scott, and maybe that's what it comes down to. I was also pretty surprised to see another guy that's put up big numbers for the Breeze in past years, Justin Solis, left off the roster, as well as Troy Holland. I kind of said at the beginning of the season I thought both those players would really play themselves into bigger roles this year, but neither really got the full playing time to show it. Solis particularly, though, had no turnovers or drops, despite being a guy that earns big unders frequently, dishing out 4 assists and a goal in only 4 games and opportunities to do so. Holland netted a pair of blocks and had a great Callahan, also in limited opportunities. So those two guys kind of jumped out at me as I would have been excited, or maybe even at the beginning of the season expectant, to see them make the final 28 players. One thing I will say is the Breeze have a lot of like really possession-oriented handlers on the 28 roster spots. Of course, Jonathan Neely's got to make that spot. Of course, Lloyd Blake's got to make that spot. Nathan Pryor, Zach Norbom, and Norbom particularly, a guy with only 4 games this year, but guys that maintain possession really well, they both make the roster. Lots of opportunities and to put out a really handler, a really possession-oriented handler line in the 28 names that were taken on the final roster. Another interesting player on that final roster, or rather, maybe I should say that was left off, and the player with the highest points played who was left off the final roster was Joe Richards. Not a top contributor to the Breeze in terms of points plays, 23rd overall in the year, but interesting that he was tied for first in blocks per point this year. So a guy that was generating turns. Came with some risk, also a high turnover player, number 6 in turnovers thrown, number 2 overall in drops, and those are per point played, I should say. So there is reason that Joe Richards not in that final 28, but still interesting and a big contributor through the 2017 season, not on that final 28-man roster. Other notes off the top, the USAU Open this past weekend was played out in Minnesota. A lot of amateur teams showed up. A lot of youth teams from D.C. really excelling at that tournament. Under 17 teams, under 20 teams, mixed and men's and women's, or girls and boys, I guess, were all out there. Special shout out to the under 17 girls team from D.C. that won it all. Super exciting for DC Rogue. And then also shout outs to Johnny Malks, who was one of the 35 guys on the Breeze roster in 2017. He played on that under 20 U20 boys team. So pretty impressive out of him. Also Joe Freund, of course, a standout for the Breeze in 2017, one of the assistant coaches for the under 17 boys team. So shout outs to all the Breeze affiliates in those games. Shout outs to all the teams from DC that excelled so well out in Minnesota. This Friday, home game against Montreal. That goes down August 11th at 7 p.m., Gallaudet University. Very excited for that. I will be broadcasting in the booth with the AltiWorld crew and Charlie Eisenhood. come on out to Gallaudet. It's bound to be a massive game and a huge celebration of the sport, and then hopefully we'll take home the win as well, which will just lead to more celebrations. Should the Breeze win that game, Sunday will be an away game in Toronto. They ended the Breeze season in 2016. The Breeze lost by 2 in overtime in a physical and, at times, I'll say contentious game. So I will look to find any way to watch that. I'm hoping it gets broadcast in some capacity, because the winner of that game, if the Breeze are there, or even if Montreal is the team that goes up, will go to the Final Four in Montreal on the weekend of August 26th and 27th. That's finals weekend. It happens in Montreal. So it'd be great if the Breeze went, because it is one of the, you know, closer cities in the league, and it's an Eastern Division team, so it'd be great to represent the Eastern Division in an Eastern Division city where they'd probably enjoy some crowd support from Montreal fans that are more familiar with the Breeze players. Last thing I want to do here is tell you to check out the Breeze website. Tyler Byram has some great articles up there about season recap, stats from the East, stats from the Breeze specifically. And let's do our sponsors really quick, or our partners, I should say. Papa John's Pizza, MedStar Sports Alliance, Spectrum Management, Big Board, Port City, Layout Gloves, Oak Creek Apparel, Discraft, and community partner, WAFC, Washington Area Frisbee Club. Thanks to everyone, and thanks to the Broke Royals for playing our intro theme. Here we go. So I have the honor today of sitting down with Jumpin' Johnson, 2017 Breeze Blocks leader, Rico Johnson. Del Rico, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. We're doing a late night session here after a Breeze practice. I had a practice myself for club. We're both tired, but we're going to bring the energy. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. Let's do it.
Cool. So the first thing that I think everyone wants to know a little something about is your presence on Twitter. You want to drop your Twitter handle quick?
At SkyinFlatBallers, SkyinBallaz.
So it's a spelling test and a handle.
Yes.
But particularly that Twitter handle is worth knowing because you've been tweeting heavily at Rowan McDonnell, friend of the podcast, the only other D-line player I think I've had on this year on Hot Air. And you've been talking about rompers.
Yes.
Why is that?
Rompers was... The male romper was big early in the summer, and it was crazy. They had a couple GQ shots, and I actually probably would wear one. I was actually excited. I was excited to wear a romper if I lost.
You're always a fashion icon on the field with your hair, so yes. I mean, it makes sense. You're going full romper.
Yes.
Bro romper.
Bro romper.
Bromper?
Bromper.
But so you have bet Rowan McDonald that over the course of the season, the person with the most blocks, is that correct, on the Breeze?
Yes.
Is going to force the other guy to wear a romper, a bromper.
Yes.
In what context? Does he need to wear it out to the DC9 local? Does he need to wear it out to the bar after a game, going over to a Big Board bar?
We haven't decided yet.
Because you've won this contest at this point. The season's over. Spoiler alert, you've won. 19 Ds to 18 Ds.
It's hard. I probably should have thought more where, but I don't know. Maybe I'll put a poll up on Twitter.
Okay. So what has been established in your head though? This romper needs to wear. Is there a pattern picked out? What are you feeling for Rowan?
So I actually tweeted at Five Ultimate and I asked them if they had any rompers, and they said this is the closest we can get, and they sent me. It's kind of like a onesie, but short style, and it's got a hoodie. There was a floral print and like a space print, and I think Rowan would look good in the floral print.
It matches his eyes?
Yes.
So, I mean, a romper is a onesie.
Yeah.
Just right. Cut off at the shorts.
Yeah.
Does it have the butt flap?
It does not.
Okay. So I feel like the butt flap might be good for his comfort, but maybe more hilarious for your viewing to watch him or see how time him when he's in the restroom, right?
Yes.
Is there any more contests in the postseason, or are you about to bear down? No time for rompers in the postseason. What if he outscores you with blocks in the next game here?
I was debating opening it up to the playoff. I might. I think that'll be more fun. Because, the reason why it started was we always challenge each other to play hard and get a block on defense. If I'm on the line and he's going off after a break, he'll say, get us a D. And I would say the same thing to him. So at one point, we were getting the same amount of Ds, and I missed a game, and that's when he went off against Montreal.
Yeah.
At home.
So actually, he might have the inside scoop to play against Montreal here.
Yeah, he got 6 blocks that day. So
woo!
I'm a little nervous. But yeah, I'll open it back up for this home game.
You heard it here first? Am I getting an exclusive?
Exclusive.
All right, so the romper quest continues, and Rico's going to need to come up with some blocks on Friday night against Montreal to keep it rolling.
Yep.
Keep himself out of the romper.
Yeah.
But as you said, was this a gamble that it would be more of a punishment for Rowan than it would be for you? Because you would feel comfortable in that skin?
I think both of us would look good in it.
But who would enjoy it more?
I would.
Perfect.
So I'll go for the tie.
Okay.
That's what the fans want.
I think if it's a tie, you both have to wear the same romper.
Yes.
It's a two-person romper.
Yeah, so we'll just have to tape two together.
See if Five Ultimate can custom make us that. Yes. Or Oak Creek Apparel. That one's that's the guy. Those are the guys on our side.
Yeah. Clay, get on that.
Clay Collins, former Breeze great and player as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's turn it. We'll turn the dial. We'll get a little bit more serious. I think one thing that I would love to know going into this year about the D-line on the Breeze was I felt like a lot of players from pretty different backgrounds really came together to make this D-line possible. And particularly among the 5 guys that racked up the most points this year, points played, was yourself, David Bloodgoods, David Shield, Austin Bartenstein, and Marcus Thal. Tell me how, and I mean, there's obviously you can keep going down the list in playing time, and it is some guys that you have some more familiarity with, some truck guys.
Yeah.
But of those top 5, those aren't really guys you played a lot of club time with. How do you bring a diverse group of guys together, or diverse playing backgrounds, I'll say at least, and get them on the same page and have an elite defensive unit like you guys did?
I think first it starts with repetitions. Just every day at practice, we try to have the same lines. If you look through the season, I think a lot of the lines were the same. At least core 3. We do a pod system, so it would be a pod of 3 that are usually together based on if they're a handler, if they're a cutter. So practices with Will and Daryl, they did a lot of us just playing together. And that really helped us get terminology and just used to how each other plays defense.
Hmm.
Specifically with Austin, I played with him last year on the current. Rest in peace. We should pause for a second.
We can pause. Yeah. Moment of silence.
Yes. Yeah.
A brief interlude. I did see a Wildwood team this year named the Currently Unemployed, a play on the DC Currently Unemployed. Current players that weren't so lucky to land on the Breeze, like yourself and Austin.
Right. Good team. Good team name.
Great team name, yeah.
I think that'll be one of the runs, the names that run every year at Wildwood.
Yeah. So. Okay, so anyway, so you had a little bit of experience with Austin.
Yeah.
But so talk about these other guys. So you had a pod, it's repetition. You know, is there, you know, one of the things I had a D-line guy on the podcast 2 weeks ago, you might know, my brother who plays up in Philly.
Yeah.
And he talked a lot about just, you know, it's guys at the level you're playing at understand all the different ways you can run a defensive line. And it's not so much that they go out and do your best every time. It's getting on the same page. Would you agree with that? That you can walk into any the Davids, as I'll call them, walk into Marcus Thal and say, you know, hey, we're preventing unders, we're preventing arounds this point. Agree or disagree? It's just about getting everyone on the same page.
Yeah, I agree. One big thing was the terminology. So if you were saying block unders, someone else like Marcus could say just no unders. So even though they sound the same, when you're on the field and everything's moving fast, if I say block unders, you might not understand it the first time. But if I say no unders, like now you understand. So it was a lot of us, like after the play, what we do, we huddle up as a D-line and we talk about what happened. So after every point, if we're talking, we can bounce ideas off each other. So we get to know each other more by what we did on the field that last play, and also by speaking out and saying, hey, I like this better. If you tell me to do this, I better understand it.
Are there any quirks about the D-line that the people should know? The banter that goes on at practice? Any inside details about any one of those guys that you should call out right now?
Austin's nickname is the Hand Cannon.
The Hand Cannon?
The Hand Cannon.
Okay.
If you get to see him put up a huck, it's got some power behind it. You should see him pull upwind, throw upwind hucks. He's just ridiculous and just shoots out of his hand.
Like just hand shoots cannon. Out of his hand. Okay, so describe. I mean, if you've been on enough D lines in your ultimate career at this point, if you had two adjectives to give to this year's DC Breeze D line, what would you say?
Hungry and persistent.
Okay. I think that those should bode well going into the playoffs here. Defense will be a big part of this Friday's game against Montreal. Speaking of which, put on your analyst hat. How would you, as opposed to the other teams around the East, how would you characterize the Montreal offensive line? And then what do you go into that huddle and say, here's how we play them smarter, better, stronger, faster, whatever?
So, they don't really, it's weird. They have an offense, but at the same time, they don't. It's not like a standard vert stack, horizontal stack, side stack. It's whatever. It's almost a blob.
usually you say that's a detriment on offense.
No, they just know how to. They're really good at cutting off of one each other. Not cutting them off as in taking their space, but if one person is going out, they're good at setting each other up. So what makes that hard is that we really don't know if that end cut is actually going in all the way. It might turn into a deep cut, or if that deep cut, if they're going to extend it until they get another up line, and it was hard. I mean, you saw up in Montreal, we got a lot of a lot of round breaks,
yeah,
and their upside down throws.
Yeah, so I think something that I have noticed certainly is they're really willing to put the inverted pass up.
Yeah.
They're reliant on getting the disc to the break side of the field. And then I think what I gathered from you there is they're starting cuts from nearly anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, you're used to saying, oh, you know, you're hot, yeah. under, he's going out from the sideline, or even relying on someone on the field from telling you those things. And it doesn't sound like you can do that with the Royale.
No, it's, we have a term, playing honest. And so you have to play on its heads up D. Like, there's no time off, and those full 7 seconds, you have to be engaged. And I don't think in Montreal, I think we were playing defense for 6 seconds.
Yeah. So
it was like that 1 second, that's when that hammer went off. And it's like, oh, I thought it was close enough, but no, here comes a four-side hammer that somehow worked.
Wow. Okay, so if that's maybe one of the keys to the game, playing honest, do you have any other keys to the game that you think, you know, 2 days out, you're already in your head or be part of the pregame discussion? You know, what else is essential to shut down the Montreal offensive unit?
Well, I don't know if it's shutting them down. It's more of letting them make their own mistakes. If they're going to rely on upside-down throws, they might not hit them all. For us, our key is to make sure we convert on defense.
Hmm.
Like when we get the disc back, make sure we convert and take our time. A lot of turns that we do have, it's that we're rushing. We want to score right away. But if you think about it, if we can keep that offense out there longer and just grind undercut after undercut, it's going to pay dividends in the fourth quarter. So just be patient, have our heads up, and I think we'll see a different game than the last time we played them.
Nice. So I'm going to ask you to do the thing that nobody likes being asked to do, and that's look ahead. If you prevail this Friday against Montreal, you would go on a road trip to Toronto, talk both about your, you know, confidence level going into a Montreal home game, and then if you're willing to, forecast it forward a little bit. What does the Eastern Division playoffs look like in your mind right now?
All right. Home game, I think we're, 7-0 at home?
I think so.
Yeah, so.
We need
all the fans out.
Yeah.
The fans is the first part. Playing in front of them, it's like, it's amazing. Yeah. Even after, I think it's my fifth year playing pro, like, I'm still amazed how many people come out, like, the cheering from the sideline when you make a good play. So I think that bodes well for us, is that we have great fans in D.C. I would say, if I was putting a score on, I would say, I think we're going to, let's go with 25-18.
Notre Rica. Notre Dame.
25-18.
If that's a pretty big gap.
Yeah. You'll see that D-line. It's going to be a good one. You're going to think that our O-line is out there just because everyone in that huddle wants it.
And that's...
And it's so bad.
Yeah. So that speaks to me about a lot of confidence this Friday.
Yeah.
What kind of confidence do you have going into a road trip in Toronto, a place you've never won, against a team that eliminated the Breeze in 2016?
I'm actually really confident. Just because when we went up there, I don't know if you heard our Toronto trip.
I heard all about it, actually. It was actually very, very close to a mirror of one that we did in 2013, where we arrived 20 minutes before game time.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I'll let you speak, but it was a headache.
And so getting there 20 minutes of warm-up, it wasn't a warm-up. It was, can my legs move after, I think it was a 12-hour bus ride that was supposed to take 10. And I think we only lost by 6.
Yeah.
And sorry to call you out, but Tymon didn't have his best game. O-line didn't have our best game. I think we were missing Max. And to only lose by 6, like, that's not bad when you only have a 20-minute warm-up. Your star players aren't playing, not even B-level games. So I think we'll have everyone there. We'll have a lot more focus. We'll be a lot more rested because we travel Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Which will give us a time to rest in the hotel and everything. So I think it'll be a close game, but I do see us coming out on top, and we'll just smile at the haters.
All right. I love it. So talk to me a little bit then. So it sounds like the confidence abounds, which is really good. I think that's a mentality that maybe you need to keep as a high-performing athlete. But what does your Saturday look like, especially if you're on a bus for part of Saturday, in terms of a recovery day? You know, you've played this game long enough. You've recovered from 3 games at a tournament to play the next day. You know, are there secrets to the trade that are exclusive to you? Or, you know, what does this Saturday look like if you're recovering from a big game on Friday where you go all out to play another even bigger one on Sunday?
I think before I go up, I'll probably cook a lot of food, a lot of protein. Just to give myself that extra energy.
Some prot.
Some chicken. Some marinated chicken. I actually have some marinating right now.
Oh my goodness. Here's a guy marinating chicken. That's a marinating chicken look right there.
Yeah. Marinated in some soy sauce. And, which is actually, I found out at Wildwood. It's really good.
Okay. All right. I'll deposit that one. Actually, maybe we'll have a podcast next season just cooking with Rico.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's your diet is part of it.
Yeah, definitely diet. Kind of hard to rest on a bus, but it's kind of like an airplane. You either do or you don't. But if you aren't gonna sleep, just don't be distracted. Maybe like read a book or something. Try to at least close your eyes. Just little movement. I tend to sleep on the bus, so I'll put on like some music and just mellow out and not worry about the game until it comes to me. Because if I worry about the game, that first hour, that second hour, all the way up, it's not going to do me any well.
Despite the fact that you're literally going to the game, you're going to wait for the game to get to you.
Yeah.
Okay, well, here's the hot tip that I've got for the on-the-bus sleeper. This came from a rival AUDL team's playbook.
All right.
And maybe the Breeze are already doing this, and I'm just not down with the bus culture. But underneath the seats, you know, you're sleeping on top, you're in the fetal position, you're risking a cramp, but just laying down on that bus floor, extending the full width of the bus, how do you feel about that?
There are several players who do that, and I'm not down with it. There's something about a coach bus floor.
You don't know what's happened there.
I don't know. So me, I'm more of a take the back seat by that by the bathroom.
Okay.
There's no pooping on the bus, so you don't have to worry about that smell.
There's no pooping on the bus? That's a breeze rule?
That is a breeze rule.
Wow.
No pooping on a bus.
that's breaking news. Yes. I never heard of such a policy. A 12-hour bus ride.
Yeah. So I'll sleep on that back seat, and which is three wide instead of two, and I'll bring a nice pillow. My Eagles blanket.
this is the secret to success?
Yes. I'm just name dropping all the teams that I like. So my Philadelphia Eagles blanket. Maybe.
Yeah, that can't be popular down here in DC.
I know. It pains me.
All right, so I think we've arrived at a segment that you were very excited to talk about, which I do every week on the podcast, over-under.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to give people, I think you know already, a brief for the listeners. I'm going to give you a noun, a thing, ultimate related or not. You're going to tell me whether it's overrated, underrated. You're going to have to defend that standpoint as I grill you about it. Over-underrated, we just came back for season 3, Game of Thrones.
Overrated.
Overrated.
Yes.
Not a Game of Thrones watcher.
No.
I can't say that I am a watcher, but I want to properly probe you on this issue. What's wrong with Game of Thrones?
Too much hype.
Did you try to get into it?
I did. I tried to watch the first season. I missed a week, and after you miss a week, there's no catching up, and I was left in the dust. Maybe I'm still salty from that. But
you just had friends that just pushed ahead.
Yeah. I was like, guys, wait for me. And they're like, no.
Okay, Game of Thrones, overrated. Actually, I think I feel that reasoning is that left in the dust doesn't seem like a great place to be. Terms of ultimate strategy. Knowing who you're going to be matching up on D-line prior to the game, over, underrated. That preparation of knowing that's your guy.
I would say overrated also. If you think yourself as a good defense player, it doesn't really matter who you're matched up with. If you know their strength, like what they like or their tendencies, if someone likes to cut deep, you do your best to not let them go deep and just challenge the under. So I think as a player, it doesn't matter like who you're matched up with. Just do your best either to hold the force or make it difficult. Like, you're not going to have a perfect game. Like, someone's going to break you. Someone might score on you, but it's going out every point, knowing that you want to take away something. So, I guess to all the kids out there, if you find a matchup that you think you're not good enough to defend, just figure out what you want to take away and do your best to do that.
That's the one you should overcome.
Yeah.
Ultimate sideline snack, pickles.
Underrated.
Underrated. Yes. You're a pickle guy.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I love.
Are you a half sour, full sour? I assume not sweet pickle, because then you're insane.
I actually had the hot pickles.
Hot pickles.
Yeah, that's a game changer.
I can get in on that. Those are kind of the, even though they're called hot, I would say they fall into more the sweet camp, because they're usually kind of sweet and hot. Do you bring your own pickles?
I do not.
You don't? No. You're a pickle moocher, no less.
I am.
Unabashed pickle moocher, Rico Johnson on hot air.
I don't want to be the guy who gets called out for bringing the pickles, but I will be the guy who eats all the pickles.
Over underrated, the pick six rule in Ultimate. When you catch the disc on D, you can run with it until you're usually a two-hand touch rule down. Underrated.
Underrated.
Yeah?
It should be more.
You should play with that more? We should bring that to the ADL?
They should.
I've done it a lot on windy days, and I think there's an argument to be made on a windy day. But even in calm conditions, underrated?
Underrated.
All right. So I'm going to harken back to your college mascot for Ultimate. Under-overrated panda bears. You're a pandemonium player in undergrad, is that right?
Underrated.
Underrated.
Pandas need love, too.
I think they definitely need love because they're struggling to reproduce. Yeah. They're terrible. They're bad at animal.
It brings in... It's like the yin-yang animal.
It is that.
It is.
Very literally, yes. In just their coloring alone.
Yes.
Last one. Former teammate of yours for years. Former DC Breeze great. Hasn't played, I believe, on the Breeze since 2014.
Can I guess?
Guess.
White Hat?
Daniel White Hat Selwyn. Under-overrated.
Underrated.
Underrated. He's put up some big numbers on the Breeze, but big numbers, both assists and turnovers. Why do you think he's underrated?
I think his confidence in any situation. Like, I don't think wind affects him, and you need a strong thrower in the wind. I've seen him put up backhands, put up flicks. He'll throw, like, scoobers. I actually taught him a lefty scoober.
You'll take a little part of that credit?
I'll take credit for that. And I think he just hasn't had the platform to shine. Maybe, like, on the Breeze, he did, but, like, I think if you put him on...
Yeah, I would argue he's had that platform for 2 years, and he put up.
And I think he's one guy. He's always the first pick in the draft.
Yeah.
And from Central Maryland, CMUA, we know how good he is. I think if he was brought to, like, I hope MedMen goes to Nationals this year, so people can say, man, look at this guy.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just because he's a good friend, but I think throwing-wise, he has a lot of the throws that you could see a Markham Schaffner put up.
Yeah. Okay. You've survived over-under. Another question I wanted to ask you about is one that I think as a although folks at home can't see my complexion, I'm a white male, and it's one that's sometimes hard to talk about, but you are a black male. It's about being a black male in the very white sport of ultimate. And so this year you had a new coach come in, a black man by the name of Daryl Stanley. You know, what's it like having a black coach out there? What's it like? You know, are there extra expectations on your shoulder by being one of the few black faces on the ultimate field? How do you feel out there, and how do you feel about kind of the direction the community is going in terms of diversity?
Having Daryl's great. I think it's kind of weird. Like when you see, you know how people drive Jeeps and like they always wave at each other.
Okay.
It's kind of like that. You see another black athlete on the floor, on the field, and you're like, yeah, we're in this together. Like, we're in a sport where there aren't that many black people. You go home, you tell your parents you're playing Ultimate, and they're like, you're playing Frisbee? And you tell your friends, they're like, what? Like, with the dogs? And I'm like, no, it's not like that. And like, your friends are playing football, they're playing basketball, kind of like black guy in soccer. Like, there aren't really many.
Well, in North America, maybe. North
America. Football. There's a lot in football.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
in soccer.
Yeah, for sure.
But, no, it's...
So then what do you think about... So I think we're all well aware, certainly folks that, you know, follow Ultimate closely are well aware of the lack of black role models, the lack of black athletes. What do you think about kind of the direction the community is taking in this area? And
I think... It's not tough. It's hard to talk about, not because of how it makes you feel, but I think just because there aren't that many black athletes, and I think right now we're in a time where we are, I wouldn't say not focused, but right now we're working on gender equity.
Yeah.
Right now.
I mean, that's definitely the hot button issue of the last, I don't know, I'll say 2 years, but it's way more than that.
Yeah. Right now we're doing gender equity, and I think we'll approach the diversity aspect of Ultimate when it comes up, when we're ready as a community.
Yeah.
And so I won't say that it's not important. It's just that I think we need more diversity to happen before we all... as a black athlete, before we're able to speak up and say, hey, let's feature more black athletes.
I mean, that sounds very, very selfless, considering that, you know, you are the one to bring to the table to talk about black athletes in Ultimate, and you're saying, you know, it's worth focusing on one thing at a time, and it's worth, you know, riding this current momentum that we have with gender equity.
Yeah.
So talk to me about that. I mean... what sort of developments have you seen around Ultimate? Are they heartening in terms of gender equity?
Yeah, I think we're making the right strides. And it's hard because we see the goal Like, we want women to have the same opportunities as we do. It's like we want it now. And it's not going to come now, but there's things that we can do now to make that process come faster.
Yeah.
And so over the weekend, I was at US Open with Truck Stop.
Right. And local yeah. Club team in D.C., local yeah. amateur team.
Yeah. And so there was a gender equity meeting, and I was just happy to see that, number one, that meeting is happening with YCC kids, with the youth. You're telling the youth that it's important that women have the same opportunity and that they're able to, like, get the same coverage. Like,
yeah.
It wouldn't be fun if it was just all guys playing.
Right.
Like, I do like mixed, and I do like the women's game. The women's final, I don't know if you heard about it.
I watched it.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And so one of the questions that's been going on is, what are you doing as a male to help gender equity? And I think definitely me talking about it on this podcast helps. It's bringing attention. Like, we should be more aware of the women on the field and the opportunities that they get also.
But it's a call to action, too.
Yeah.
I mean, talking is only the first step.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's a fair assessment. That we've taken some strides, and there's obviously more progress to be made.
Right.
One thing I would say, and kind of back to my original line of questioning, is particularly on a diversity front and getting more black youth involved in Ultimate, I think D.C. is poised, as many major urban areas are, but D.C. in particular, you know, a place once referred to as the Chocolate City, to bring more black athletes into the sport at a young age. And I'm hoping to see more progress from the Breeze camp as more high school programs start up over the next couple of years. The Breeze, I know, have been talking to Dunbar High School, a largely black school, about getting those programs off the ground. So a unique position I think we're in here in D.C.
I'm excited.
All right. Thanks a lot for coming on Hot Air.
Thanks.
Good luck this Friday. We hope to see everyone out at Gallaudet University. Wrapping it up. Adios.
Yeah. See ya. What was your worst experience on the farm?
Oh, man. I'm getting interviewed now?
Yes.
On my own podcast?
Yes. Really
yeah, responsibilities. That's what I hate.
Like, I'd rather go dig holes.
Yeah.
That's an old reference.
I missed it entirely. I just laughed politely.
Man.